It's hard to imagine now in 2011 that it's been only 50 years or so since marrying a person of another race was a crime that could get you arrested and thrown into jail.
It was about 2 a.m. and I saw this light, you know, and I woke up and it was the policeman standing beside the bed, and he told us to get up, that we was under arrest.
They came one night and they knocked a couple times. I heard them, and before I could get up, you know, they just broke the door and came right on in.
Those are the voices of Mildred and Richard Loving, a Virginia couple that married in 1958 and were arrested hours later. Their crime, breaking the Racial Integrity Act of 1924. That act criminalized marriages between white and non-white people. Richard's ancestors came from Europe. Mildred's were Native American and African. The Lovings initially pled guilty to the charges, but they eventually fought back with a series of lawsuits that culminated in the Supreme Court case Loving v. Virginia. In 1967, the court ruled unanimously in their favor, proclaiming that laws that criminalized interracial marriage violated the 14th Amendment. A new documentary remembers that case. It's called The Loving Story. The director, Nancy Bursky, joins us now, along with attorney Phil Hirschkopf, who led the Lovings in Loving v. Virginia as well. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
First of all, Phil, let me ask you, what changed the minds of the Lovings? Why did they change their initial plea of guilty to deciding to fight this case?
Well, they were banished from Virginia and moved up into the D.C. and basically living in what they considered a ghetto area. And Richard couldn't exist up there. They missed their families. They were threatened with felony prosecutions if they went back to Virginia. And then there was the civil rights demonstrations that starting in 63 and the decisions from the U.S. Supreme Court, and they just felt they needed to do something.
And Nancy Bursky, in deciding to do a documentary about this case, you know, there's so many civil rights issues which are still an issue in today's age, in which there are still laws on the books where we haven't completely won that fight. It seems like miscegenation is a battle that we completely won. Why do a documentary about this case?
You know, it's important to remember the people that made these changes, made them happen. And one of the exciting things about portraying Richard and Mildred Loving is that they were rather unlikely heroes. They were not activists. They were not the kinds of people that fought for change in America. They really just wanted to go home and live in Virginia. So not only did I feel that they deserved to be remembered, I was amazed, in fact, that there never had been a documentary made on their lives. But I think it also reminds us that people, anyone really can change history. People can do it for reasons that may not necessarily fit into the history books, but they can really make a difference.
You know, Phil, the Lovings were a couple that tried to stay out of the limelight for a very long time. That's something that makes sense to me. Interracial couples in those days were actually in real danger and under threat and were attacked in states across the country. Was that something that the Lovings were concerned about before they decided to pursue this case?
No, not really. Where they lived, there were a number of interracial couples. There was a lot of mixing of the races in that area, midway between Richmond and Norfolk, Virginia, both Native Americans and African Americans and Caucasians. There wasn't any real threat to them. The threat was from the prosecution and the sheriff.
Well, Nancy, let me ask you, did you find that their case mirrors a lot of the cases that we have moving today, or that there are no longer any clear-cut decisions like this? Maybe it wasn't as clear-cut as it seems today, but in this particular case, the Supreme Court was unanimous. It wasn't a split decision. It doesn't seem like we have civil rights cases like that anymore.
You know, I'm not sure I can speak to specific cases, but I think there's a certain universality about their case, and I think that we do see it mirrored in society today. We did not purposely focus on those similar issues in our film, but I think that those issues do come out. They emerge from their story. I think that what you see when you watch the film and you learn of the humanity of these people is that people struggle mightily to be able to make choices, to be able to love who they want to love. And I think that we certainly can relate to that in today's society when we're talking about gender, race issues and things like that. So what I was hoping by making this film is that people would connect and empathize with people who are struggling like the Loving struggled.
You know, Phil, I got to ask you, this case took place before I was born, and it seems like I said to Nancy, such a clear-cut case to me now, 50 years on, where I never had to deal with this particular issue. I'm wondering, what was your legal argument? How did you go before the court and say, this is just wrong, this law?
Well, morality was not an issue, although that was the Warren Court. It was a wonderful court. Still, we were then in a big change. Brown v. Board wasn't long before that, which right. young children can go to school and get an education regardless of race. And there were a number of other changes in the legal system. The court had just recognized that a felon had a right to a lawyer. In those days, a felon could be convicted and go to jail for life and never have seen a lawyer. So there were a lot of changes being made by that Supreme Court of things that seem morally reprehensible, but the law hadn't recognized them yet.
But what changes do you see now in the Supreme Court that we have today since the Warren Court?
Well, it's a very polarized Supreme Court, and Nancy puts her finger on it, a parallel to gay marriage and gay rights and gay unions. This Supreme Court is so political that you can just guess there's a 4-4 split, regardless of the legal merits, on the rights of gay people. And it's a question what that fifth person will do.
What do you think, Nancy, that the Lovings might have had for advice is for a couple? I mean, would they have? I mean, would they have tried to stay out of it completely? But I mean, because I imagine they would be seen as a role model.
You know, I can only project. I think that the power and the principle of this case kind of crept up on them. They were very interested in just getting home and living in Virginia with their family. But I think the more they stayed involved in it and they dealt with some of the legal issues with Phil Hirschkopf and Bernie Cohn, the more they began to realize that there was a principle involved. And they felt, particularly Richard, who was a very quiet, taciturn gentleman, just felt that this was wrong. And he on principle, you know, he could have. Frankly, there were in other states, marriages were annulled, and people would go ahead and divorce their wives in order not to go in jail. But he refused to do that. You know, he was just determined to stay married to the woman he loved.
Well, I owe something personally to them. Their case made my grandparents' marriage legal. And Phil, I wanted to say thank you to you as well. My grandparents had to get married in Tijuana because it was illegal at the time that they got married in the 1940s. So, hey. Thanks for making my grandparents legit.
Well, there were a lot of people involved in the case. I was just one.
Nancy Bursky is the director of the new documentary, The Loving Story. Phil Hirschkopf, the attorney who helped the Lovings overturn anti-miscegenation laws that were on the books in 16 states in 1967. The film's being shown at the Tribeca Film Festival. Thanks to both of you.
You're welcome.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.